pleasure to introduce a former student. In fact, he used to be a student in this particular room, and we had classes of 120 people. What bothers a former teacher is that people get to be lieutenant commanders, because these are reminders of how time passes. Chaplain Wetzel is a lieutenant commander, as you can see from his stripes, and you notice the Navy wears the cross on the sleeve. We once thought about this in the Air Force, but changed it then to over the heart. It is a very distinct pleasure to have Chaplain Wetzel here from the Great Lakes Naval Training Station, and he will talk to us this afternoon about the Navy chaplaincy, which we used to call the Air Force Saltwater Division. Chaplain Wetzel.
I might add, what delights the students is to see the professors becoming Brigadier General. Thank you, Dr. Shalman. I want to say that it's really a pleasure for me to be here this afternoon for several reasons. First of all, as you men will someday discover, it's always a pleasure to come back to your old alma mater and see the familiar surroundings in which you once lived and worked. This is a particular pleasure for me today. The other reason, of course, is to be here with you this afternoon to talk to you about something which is very close to my heart and something which I take every opportunity to talk about, and that is, of course, the Navy chaplaincy and the role of the Navy chaplain as such. I'd like to just make a few introductory remarks. First of all, some of the things I'm going to be saying here this afternoon are going to be true not only or specifically about the Navy chaplain, but about the chaplain in any of the branches of the armed forces, Air Force, Army, or Navy. But I'm going to be speaking about the Navy chaplain as such, and if there are those things which apply also to the other services, this, of course, is to be expected. I'd like to give you a brief background from which I'm speaking to you this afternoon, maybe of some interest to you. I graduated from Concordia Seminary in 1956 and accepted a call to St. Paul Lutheran Church in Monahans, Texas, way out west where the sand blows and the mesquite grows. In 1957, a year after graduation, I applied for and received a commission as chaplain in the Naval Reserve. And 2 years later, in 1959, I received and accepted a call from the Armed Forces Commission to go on active duty with the Navy. In 1959, I then went to the chaplain school, the Navy chaplain school at Newport, Rhode Island. And after completing that, I went to Great Lakes for my first tour of duty there. Then I went to the staff of Commander Destroyer Division 132 out of Long Beach, California. Completing that, I went to the staff of Commander Cruiser Destroyer Flotilla 3 out of Long Beach. Subsequent tours were at Naval Hospital in Chelsea, Massachusetts, staff of Commander Service Squadron 8 out of Norfolk, Virginia. Then immediately before coming to Great Lakes, I had a tour of duty under instruction in the postgraduate program at the University of Chicago. At the present time, I'm the assistant to the district chaplain, the headquarters 9th Naval District at Great Lakes. I might mention that the naval establishment in this country is divided into districts, each of them having a headquarters centrally located, and attached to the staff of the headquarters commandant is a district chaplain, who supervises and directs the religious activities of the Navy in that particular district. Here at Great Lakes, the Naval District, the 9th Naval District, includes the 13-state area, which takes the center chunk right out of the Midwest. And it is this district which has its headquarters at Great Lakes. One function, or two functions rather, of the district chaplain's office, I might mention at this point because it is rather significant. One is the matter of procuring new chaplains for the Navy, both in the reserves and on active duty. And the other is the supervision and administration of the reserve program of the Navy within that particular naval district. So this is primarily what we do up at Great Lakes. And this is primarily also why, or another reason why I'm delighted to be here, because part of our job up there is to tell the story of the Navy Chaplain Corps and to give people an idea of what the Navy Chaplain Corps is all about. In speaking about the role of the Navy Chaplain, I'd like to give you just a few aspects to start with and then take off from there. I'd like to speak very briefly about the Navy Chaplain and his church. The Navy Chaplain is a Navy Chaplain only because he is, first of all, a clergyman. And he is in the Navy only because his church says they would like to have him in the Navy and has called him to this particular special ministry. He is a naval officer only secondly and only because he is a clergyman. And consequently, the ministry which the Navy Chaplain performs is a special ministry, but it is in very many ways the same kind of a ministry which the pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Des Moines, Iowa might have. Preaches the same gospel, administers the same sacraments, comforts the people when they are sick or dying. In many ways, I say it's a ministry identical to that of any other pastor. It is different in this, that the congregation which he serves is made up perhaps of a different type of individual. The surroundings in which he works is often quite different. The pulpit may be not the same as the one in St. Paul's Church in Des Moines, but it may be a depth charge rack on the fantail of a ship, or it may be the hood of a Jeep out in combat with the Marines. But other than that, the similarity is identical. In the command, the Navy Chaplain has a place as a staff officer. In other words, he is not a line officer and can never hold a position of command. But he is on the staff of the commanding officer. And he advises the commanding officer in the area of the spiritual welfare of the men and in the area of morale. And as such, he also serves the men who are attached to that particular command, both in a religious ministry and in other areas. I might mention, I had intended to say it earlier, but I might mention at this point that I'm going to go for about 30 to 40 minutes, and then I'm going to stop myself and give you gentlemen a chance to ask questions or pursue other areas which I have not touched upon. So if there is anything that comes to your mind which you'd like to discuss at further length, by all means, keep it in the back of your mind and bring it up towards the end of our presentation here. Let me give you a general idea of the type of billets or the type of duty assignments served by the Navy Chaplain. And these are, of necessity, of great variety. We have, first of all, the shore billets or shore stations, which include naval stations, naval air stations, weapon stations, shipyards, and this type of station, which is a shore billet, where the chaplain has the opportunity to set up more or less a permanent chapel program. Most of these places have a permanent chapel and a rather complete chapel program. This is quite different to the setup which the chaplain faces when he goes afloat, in which case he might be assigned directly to a ship, whether it be one of the larger vessels, a cruiser or a carrier or a submarine or destroyer tender, or whether it be a group of smaller ships, such as a division of destroyers or a squadron of destroyers. The smaller ships do not carry a chaplain for each of the ships, but rather they have one chaplain who is assigned to a squadron or a division. A division of destroyers would be four ships. Each of these ships carries roughly 250 men, and consequently the chaplain, as he ministers to these men, he moves from ship to ship as the opportunity presents itself. When I was attached to the staff of Commander Destroyer Division 132, I would spend roughly a month or 2 months on board one of the destroyers and then move all my gear aboard the other one and ride that ship for a month or two. When we were deployed to the Far East, I would ride one ship, and then when we put into port, I would transfer to another ship. And in this way, attempt to minister to the men of the ships attached to this particular division. In the larger ships, the aircraft carriers or the cruisers, it's a little different. Most of these have a permanent chapel aboard, and the chaplain is again able to establish some kind of permanent chapel program within which to work. The chaplain in the Navy also serves the Marine Corps. In other words, the Marine Corps does not have chaplains of its own, neither do they have medical officers of their own. But rather when the the Navy chaplains and the Navy medical officers periodically serve with the units of the Marine Corps. This is why all of the Marine Corps units in Vietnam right now are served by Navy chaplains and Navy medical officers. When the Navy chaplain serves with the Marine Corps, he wears the uniform of the Marine Corps, at least most generally he does. And he becomes actually a part of the unit and a part of the Corps until such time as he has completed his tour and then again goes either to a Navy afloat billet or a Navy shore station, in which case he then again puts on his Navy uniform. This is something that is not as generally known as it ought to be. But there are no chaplains as such with the Marine Corps. All of the chaplains that serve with them are Navy chaplains. Let me just briefly go through the progression of the Navy chaplain from the time he comes on active duty, just to give you a general idea of the chaplain's life, or his career, if we would. A chaplain coming on active duty with the Navy, first of all, goes to the Navy Chaplain School at Newport, Rhode Island, which is an 8-week course designed to help the individual make the transition from a civilian ministry to a ministry in the Navy. There he learns about Navy orientation, he learns about the different types of ships, the mission of the various types of ships, he learns about Navy customs, he learns about Navy traditions, he learns about all of the other things which will enable him to be comfortable in a Navy setting. Who the men are whom he serves, where they come from, what their particular setup is in the Navy, and so on. This is an 8-week course, and upon completion of this course of training, the Navy will send these young chaplains to their first tour of duty, which is normally a 6 to 9 month tour of duty at a large naval installation such as Great Lakes. It is there that the chaplain has an opportunity to get his feet on the ground, to feel his way around and to make sure that he really knows what the Navy is all about before he is sent off to some independent duty with a destroyer division or a ship of his own. After he has completed this 6 to 9 month initial tour of duty, then he is assigned to 2 years duty afloat, normally. Now, I'm speaking about the normal routine. This may, of course, be changed in individual cases. He would serve a 2-year tour of duty afloat, either, again, with a division of destroyers or other smaller ships, or aboard a carrier or a cruiser or a larger ship. The junior chaplain would very likely not be assigned initially to one of the larger ships, but to some of the smaller vessels or smaller squadron or division or flotilla staffs. After he has completed his tour of duty afloat of 2 years, then he is assigned to a 2-year tour of shore duty. Again, either at a naval air station such as Glenview, Illinois, or Olathe, Kansas, or Minneapolis, or Gros Isle, Michigan, or one of the other naval air stations, or at a naval training center such as Great Lakes or San Diego, or Bainbridge for the waves, or a Marine Corps recruit depot such as San Diego or Parris Island. Again, for a 2-year tour of duty, from there he again goes afloat, until finally he reaches that point at which he is eligible for overseas shore duty at one of the not too many overseas stations which the Navy has. And this is normally a 3-year tour overseas. And then once he returns from there, he again falls into the regular pattern of 2 years afloat and 2 years ashore. Perhaps the Navy chaplain moves around just a little bit more than the chaplains of the other armed forces do. I'm not sure about this, but it seems to me that moving around every 2 years, which is almost with the same kind of certainty with which we meet April 15th every year, but he does move around every 2 years until he reaches the rank of commander, at which time his shore duty tours become 3 years. And once he reaches the rank of captain, then the shore duty can be extended to 4 years and 2 years of float. This very briefly gives you the kind of rotation pattern which the chaplain in the Navy faces. Along the way, there may be specialized tours, such as a year of postgraduate work, which is not really a part of the normal rotation, but the individual chaplain may be offered the opportunity for this kind of specialized training. Let me interrupt myself here at this point and see if does anyone have any questions or anything up to this point that he'd like to pursue further. Please.
What happens to your family while you're on the ships for 2 years?
Well, let me go all the way back to the beginning. When the chaplain goes to Newport, Rhode Island for an 8-week course of instruction, it is not considered a permanent change of station. Consequently, his family does not go to Newport. Once he leaves Newport, he is given permanent change of station orders and his family goes with him. And the government will move his family and his household possessions. When he goes afloat, his family will be moved at government expense to the home port of the ship, wherever that may be. If it's Long Beach, California, the government will move the individual to Long Beach, California, and the chaplain may establish his household and his home there. Then, during this period of afloat duty, the chaplain may well be separated from his family when the ship deploys. Just giving you a brief background of my own experience in Long Beach, because I think it is rather typical. When I was with the destroyer division in Long Beach, the division deployed as soon as I reported aboard. I don't know if they knew I was coming or what. Anyways, they left the minute I got there. And we went out for an eight-month tour of duty at sea. During this time, it doesn't mean that we spent the full 8 months at sea, but we put into various ports in the Far East. The family, of course, stayed in Long Beach, California, and got along very beautifully, I might add. Surprising what they can do when you're gone, by way of keeping the home fires burning and keeping things going. But then at the end of the eight-month period, we came back, and then the ships would go to sea periodically for a two-week stretch, and then back in for a month or a month and a half, then out perhaps for a month, and back in for 3 days, and out for 4 days, and so on. It varied, depending on the type of training which that particular ship was engaging in. But it's then there might be other types of float duty. This is destroyers. A chaplain attached to a submarine or a destroyer tender might never go to sea during his entire 2 years afloat. In other words, the ship stays tied up at the pier, and it serves the other ships that come alongside. It's a repair shop, is actually what it is. It's a floating repair shop. It has the ability to go to sea, but it seldom does. Once a year, they'll take it out into the stream and turn it around just to make sure it can still move. But this is about it. Then again, there might be longer, even longer than 8 month cruises. So, I mean, it varies a great deal as to what actual time at sea is involved during any 2 year tour of sea duty. Then, of course, there are also the other types of tours, such as a tour of duty with the Marines in Vietnam right now, which is a 12 month tour of duty. Then there are others overseas types of duties, overseas shore duties, where the chaplain is not able to take his family simply because there are no, or the situation at the other end is such that it would be inadvisable for him to bring his family. A typical one there, which I became familiar with because I had orders out there at one time, is Iceland. I had orders to go to Iceland back in 64, and I could have taken my family out there, but it would have taken 8 months before I could have found quarters or gotten quarters for them there. Whereas if I went to Iceland myself, unaccompanied by my family, the tour of duty there is only 1 year as opposed to 2 years, or 3 years if you bring your family. So there are various types of situations of this nature in which your family is involved and in which you may have to make special types of arrangements. I might add that they later canceled my orders to Iceland after we were looking forward to going there but never had the opportunity. The interesting thing there I might throw out is that when I had these orders to Iceland, I got them in April. And, of course, the first thing you do is you write to the man whom you're relieving out there and you get as much information about the place as you can, simply because you're curious. And the man I was relieving out there wrote back and he said, it's a delightful place out here once you get used to it. But he said, there are some things we can't get out here. He says, bring them along. Bring them before you come. He says, if you bring your family, bring paper napkins because you can't get them out here. He says, have your wife stock up on a 3-year supply of nylon hose because you can't get them out here. Well, we determined that we were going to take the family out there, even though we had to wait a period of time. So we went out and we bought paper napkins, 3-year supply. My wife bought a 3-year supply of nylon hose. We're still working on that case of napkins. But these things happen, you know. But these are what make life interesting. Any other question, by the way? Please.
If it's 2 or 3 years that the graduate from the seminary would have to serve in the congregation before he was able to go ahead.
This is not a Navy requirement you're talking about now. This is the church's requirement.
Yes, right.
And I believe right now it's 2 years excluding your vicarage, 3 years including your vicarage. Let me for a moment go into the... first of all, do you have any other questions? Please.
I don't think we covered the business of educational responsibilities. Since you mentioned this opportunity, would you mind talking a little more about the Navy opportunities for education?
Yes, yes. I was going to come to it a little later, but I'd just as soon bring it in here because I think this might be a good time to bring it in. The educational opportunities in the Navy, if I might start with the several that exist. First of all, there is the 1 year, academic year, of postgraduate work at a theological seminary or a divinity school or a university somewhere in this country. And the way the Navy administers this program is that they select, of the 1,081 chaplains, Navy chaplains who are now on active duty, they select roughly 12 or 13 per year for this type of duty. It is the chaplain's prerogative to request the duty. In other words, they will not select someone who has not requested postgraduate training. But then of the hundreds of chaplains who request the duty, they then select the 12 or 13. And then they give the individual chaplain the option of the type of training he'd like to receive during that one academic year, where he'd like to receive it. And then, if at all possible, the Navy will send the individual to the school of his choice to pursue the course of study of his choice. This is perhaps the greatest educational opportunity which the Navy chaplain has. During that 1 year, he receives his full pay and allowances. It is as if he were actually on duty somewhere, but instead of going to work at a naval station or aboard a ship, he goes to school. Then the Navy has other educational opportunities, such as the clinical training courses at Berkeley, California, and at the Marriage Council in Philadelphia, which is a one-month course, where again, the Navy will send the chaplain to either of these places if he so requests it and is considered eligible and is selected. They will send him there for a one-month period of clinical training. These are perhaps the most important educational opportunities which the Navy provides. Then there are other types of seminars and training periods which are of a lesser period of time and perhaps lesser significance. The Navy does annually sponsor professional seminars for chaplains, both on the West Coast and the East Coast and at Great Lakes. Last year, the professional seminar for chaplains at Great Lakes was conducted during the month of September. And the seminar leader we had last year was Dr. Price from Concordia Seminary, Springfield. So what they do is they pick a certain area, a certain topic, and then they will select a leading man in that particular field to come and spend 1 week, five full days, with the chaplains at that seminar, making his presentation and having discussions on that particular subject. This is an annual type of thing, and this coming year, the Great Lakes Seminar will be conducted during late July and early August, and the seminar leader will be Dr. Lunger from Bright University in Texas. These are the training, or the training and educational opportunities and programs which the Navy has for the chaplains. Any other questions? Does that answer the question you had there?
Does anybody ever go to the National War College?
No, sir. No, sir.
Do you have a Navy War College?
We do not. We have a Naval War College, yes, sir, in Newport, Rhode Island.
But no chaplains,
ever attend this. No, sir.
Is that by choice, or is that for the old...
What is that?
They're going to the War College. Is that because they don't choose it, or is that because it's off-limits?
No, it's because the chaplains division of the Navy has chosen not to send chaplains. Please.
Why in the other field would a chaplain go to the college?
Pardon me?
Why in the Army or Air Force, at the Air Force, that, would the chaplain go to a war college? Wouldn't it be more for the...
Well, if you allow me a minute.
I surely will.
We send them there because this is an opportunity for those chaplains whom we expect to be staff chaplains, maybe chief of chaplains, to get familiar with foreign policy, how the military establishment relates to foreign policy, what it takes to manage a whole operation like the Navy chaplaincy or Air Force chaplaincy. And we have found this to be very, very useful.
I might add that the Navy is now in the process of revamping its training program and its its chaplain school setup, recognizing that there is need for that which the Army has, and I think the Air Force has it, is a more advanced training course where they order the chaplain. I know the Army orders them in for a full 9 months, don't they, for an advanced chaplain school? I don't think the Navy is thinking in terms of 9 months, but they're thinking in terms of some type of advanced training course for chaplains once they reach the point where they are eligible for supervisory positions. Anything else? Let me address myself for a moment now to that part of the Navy Chaplain Corps which involves the reserve chaplain. I'm going to speak about this for several reasons. Number one, because it is the only way in which a man can get into the chaplain corps. He has to come in through the reserves. There are no direct commissions from civilian life into the regular Navy. He has to come in, first of all, as a member of the U.S. Naval Reserve. The Naval Reserve is set up with one part of it comprising the Ensign Theological School program. Several of you are members of this particular program, and I'd like to say just a word about it. The Ensign Theological School program used to be called the Ensign Probationary Program. They took this out because it was considered an inappropriate title. This isn't really what it is. It's not a probationary program at all, but it's actually a theological school program designed specifically and exclusively for students at theological seminaries. The program is set up in such a way that the individual, the moment he is enrolled at a theological seminary, he becomes eligible for a commission in the Ensign Theological School program. It is purely a voluntary program, recognizing the fact that the student's primary responsibility is to pursue his studies. Consequently, very few, if any, demands are actually placed upon him. There are certain expectations that are expressed and that are it is hoped that will be met, one of them being that during the summer preceding his final year of study, the individual will request orders to the 8 weeks course at the chaplain school at Newport, Rhode Island, as several of you will be doing this coming summer. This is expected, but again, it is not demanded. It is a voluntary program, but it is expected that if at all possible, the individual will attend this particular 8-week chaplain school. I might say one other thing about the Ensign Theological School program at this point, and that is that it is not a chaplain commission at all which the individual receives. It is a line commission. It is what we call a 1945 designator, as opposed to a 4105 designator which the chaplain holds. The Ensign Theological School program has a line officer designator simply because he can never, in his present position serve on active duty as a chaplain. He is not ordained, and consequently he cannot be mobilized as a chaplain. And so he is assigned and commissioned as a line officer, in effect. The main reason, primary reason, for the program is to give the individual an opportunity to receive some preliminary training in the Navy and to familiarize himself with the Navy so he knows what the Navy is all about. And so he has the opportunity, before he is ordained, before he is commissioned as a chaplain, to attend the chaplain school at Newport, Rhode Island. It also gives the individual a chance to look the Navy over, to see if this is really what he would like to pursue once he is ordained. In other words, he has the opportunity, following ordination, to submit a letter of resignation and say, I do not desire to request a superseding appointment as Lieutenant Junior Grade in the Chaplain Corps of the U.S. Naval Reserve. He's had an opportunity to look at the Navy. On the other hand, he's also given the Navy an opportunity to look him over. And the Navy also has the opportunity not to grant a superseding appointment if it so desires. And it also is required for the Ensign Theological School program that he be endorsed by his church. In other words, your church has the opportunity to say yea or nay, we do or we do not wish to have you pursue a commission in the Ensign Theological School program. And then again, before you are granted a superseding commission as Lieutenant Junior Grade, the church again also has the opportunity to say yea or nay. In other words, it is again getting back to the idea I've expressed earlier, that the church is actually, or has the responsibility of saying whether or not an individual will be commissioned as a chaplain. The Navy cannot pick out a man and say, we're going to commission him, unless the church gives the individual the ecclesiastical endorsement. Following ordination, the individual has the opportunity to apply for a superseding commission as Lieutenant Junior Grade, a chaplain commission, 4105 designator. If he receives this particular commission, then he can be mobilized in the event of war or national emergency as a chaplain. And he immediately begins training. Begins training at a Naval Reserve Training Center, such as we have up here at Lambert Field. Or he joins a chaplain company, if there is one in the area. We only have three in the district. These are at Minneapolis, at Fargo, North Dakota, and at Omaha, Nebraska. A chaplain company consists of a group of Naval Reserve chaplains who meet two or three times a month and pursue a specified chaplain company curriculum. Deals with various phases of the chaplain's ministry, various phases or various aspects of naval organization, and this sort of thing. But they do pursue a specified curriculum at the chaplain company meetings. If he is attached to a Naval Reserve Training Center, he attends drills on a specified night a week, or if he's attached to a Marine Corps unit, he will attend weekend drills, perhaps. If he's attached to a CB division, he again may attend a weekend drill, at which time he functions at the training center as a chaplain, but it is still a training billet. In other words, he is attached to that particular unit for the purpose of receiving training, so that he might be all the more prepared and all the more ready in the event of mobilization. 2 weeks out of every year, we expect the individual reserve chaplain to leave his parish or the particular ministry in which he is engaged and to take two weeks active duty for training at some naval installation or aboard a ship for 2 weeks, a two-week cruise. But this, again, is in continuation of his training. Now, in the Naval Reserve, we have what we call a training progression for Naval Reserve chaplains, in which we specify to the chaplain the type of 2 weeks training duty which he is to receive, starting with his very first one, which, if he has not been to chaplain school, will be the indoctrination seminar, a kind of comprehensive chaplain school course which is conducted twice a year, once at San Diego, California, and then again at Norfolk, Virginia. The individual chaplain has never been to chaplain school. We send him to one of these two indoctrination seminars for some indoctrination training. After he has completed that, then the following year, we will send him to the pre-embarkation field training with Marines at Camp Pendleton, California. And this is where he gets his first taste of what it's like to spend time in the field under combat conditions with the troops. And he goes out there and he roughs it for 2 weeks. This is just to give him some training in the event of war or national emergency when he would be mobilized and perhaps sent to duty with a unit of the U.S. Marine Corps. Following that type of training, the next year, he would be sent to a naval station or a naval air station or a shipyard or some ashore billet such as that. There he would spend 2 weeks finding out what duty at this type of an installation is all about. The following year, we would send him to sea, aboard a ship for 2 weeks to give him his sea legs. And then after that, he receives his 2 weeks training duty in his mobilization billet. In other words, if his mobilization billet happens to be with the Fleet Marine Force, then we would send him to a Marine Corps unit for his 2 week training duty every year. If his mobilization billet is with an APA, we would send him to the amphibious force, either on the Atlantic Fleet or the Pacific Fleet. But we would then seek to train him in that type of work which he would be doing specifically in the event of mobilization. This very briefly gives you some idea of what the Naval Reserve is about and how it operates and how it functions. There is a difference between the ensign in the reserves, the theological school program, and his progression into the reserves and through the reserve program, and the man who starts after ordination and graduation and applies for a commission at that point, never having been an ensign. In other words, the ensign has been to chaplain school, so he would never be sent to the indoctrination seminar, but he would immediately be sent for his 2 week training duty the first year to the pre-embarkation field training course at Camp Pendleton. And the ensign has the advantage of having had some exposure to the Navy, which the other man has not had if he comes in as a lieutenant junior grade directly from a civilian parish somewhere. Do you have any questions or any points of discussion you'd like to bring up at this point? Please.
What's the minimum amount of time in the reserve before you can be mobilized?
Before you can be mobilized?
Right.
There is none.
Well, the minimum, anytime.
Anytime. In other words, if you accept a commission in the U.S. Naval Reserve, you are designated as a ready reservist, which means that you are considered ready in the event of mobilization. Please.
Seeing all these activities while you're in reserves are for training?
For training.
All training.
This is all training. You go on 2 weeks active duty for training. If you're assigned to a reserve unit somewhere, it's a training, inactive duty training billet. Training duty orders which you are issued. It's always for training. Now, as we have some chaplains who have spent time on active duty, some of them as much as 16 years, and then they come back into the reserves to continue their participation in the Navy. But they have they're a minister of a church somewhere while they also hold a reserve commission. These men, for their training duty, are almost invariably assigned to some independent some place where they can work independently and actually carry on the duties and responsibilities of a chaplain. There is one other type of duty which reserve chaplains are assigned, and this is temporary active duty in connection with the summer augmentation program. This is not for training, but this is actually active duty. In other words, chaplains in the Naval Reserve have the opportunity to request summer duty anywheres from 30 days to 3 months. And if selected and if ordered, then they actually go on active duty, not for training, but active duty for that period of time which they have specified. And they are then sent to assist at some of the larger shore installations within the naval establishment to assist during the summer period from 1 June through 30 August. You had a question back there?
If you desire a duty in the Marine Corps while you're training.
Okay. I mean, right now, if you request duty with the Marine Corps, the chances are very good. But let me back this up a little bit and speak about requesting duty, any specific type of duty in the Navy. Once a year on, I think right now it's 1 March, we fill out what we call a wish card. I'm sure the Army and the Air Force have their wish cards, in which we specify 3 things. Which do you want next? Shore duty, sea duty, overseas shore duty. And then we break each of these down into 3 different kinds of shore duty, 3 different kinds of sea duty, 3 different kinds of, or 3 different overseas billets. And then we break these down into 3 different categories as geographical areas. So you do submit a preference card of this nature. Now you can put down for your first tour of your first choice as shore duty, duty with the Marines. And you may be assigned to MCRD, Marine Corps Recruit Depot San Diego, or Marine Corps Recruit Depot Paris Island, or Marine Corps Air Station, El Toro, or any such place. Or you may put down for your first tour, first choice, as sea duty, duty with the Fleet Marine Force. And I might say that the Chaplain's Division in the Navy is extremely conscientious in granting a man his first choice, if at all possible. And I say this out of personal experience, because it has almost invariably been true in my case that they have given me my first choice. Now, there are times, I know, when it just can't be done, simply because there is no billet vacant where you're requesting to go, or you yourself have some other circumstances in your particular situation which dictate orders elsewhere. But somewhere along the line, every Navy chaplain does have duty with the Marine Corps. Some of them more so than others. Any other questions?
I'd like to get back to Shum. I don't think he asked his question the right way. What he wants to know is whether he can get on duty as soon as he becomes a reserve. Is this what you read?
Well, I think he was indicating before that there was that you had to follow the reserve program before you could be before you could go into active duty.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. I didn't make that clear. No, the chaplain in the Navy is commissioned in the Naval Reserve, as opposed not to active duty, but as opposed to the regular Navy. In other words, what I'm saying is that any civilian clergyman or theological student who accepts a commission in the Navy accepts a reserve commission. At the moment, and initially, it may be an inactive duty reserve commission, an inactive reserve commission, in which case he does not go on active duty, but he remains a student in a seminary, or if he's ordained, he remains as the minister of some church somewhere, or continues to engage in whatever ministry he is engaged in. But he holds a reserve commission, inactive. Now, at some point along the way, he may desire to go on active duty. Then he still retains his reserve commission, but he comes into the comes on active duty for a specified period of time as a reserve chaplain on active duty. Now, once he has been on active duty for a certain length of time, he is given the opportunity to request augmentation into the regular Navy. This is the difference I was trying to bring out before. And if selected for a commission in the regular Navy, then he ceases to hold a reserve commission, but he is now a member of the regular Navy. Does that answer your question?
Right. Let me extend it up a little bit further.
Surely.
May a person who receives a commission as a reserve chaplain request active duty at any point along the way of the 6 years that he would ordinarily be spending as a reserve chaplain? In other words, does he have to wait out a certain amount of time before he can request active duty?
Not as far as the Navy is concerned. Now, the church would require a certain amount of parish experience. But as far as the Navy is concerned, the moment a man is ordained, he is eligible for active duty, to request active duty. That's correct. There is no waiting period or no period of time in which he is not eligible for active duty.
Will you be talking about collateral duties?
I will. What time do we wind up here?
Well,
125. We have about
10 minutes.
Let me.
What advantages are there to regular
admission? The advantages are, well, let me try to answer that one as briefly as I can. A member of the chaplain corps in the Naval Reserve on active duty faces several obstacles. To begin with, if he is not selected for promotion from lieutenant commander to commander, then he is susceptible to involuntary release to inactive duty. In other words, from then at that point on, he is retained on active duty on a year-by-year basis at the discretion of the Navy Department. And the other advantage is that as a commander, he has to be released to inactive duty once he has completed 20 years. In other words, he cannot stay on active duty the same under the same conditions and for the same length of time as a man in the regular Navy. Basically, this would be the primary difference. There are men who have stayed and still are on active duty with reserve commissions, and they wouldn't change it. They prefer it this way. And so the advantage of going to the regular Navy are, they're perhaps minimal. Although there are these and other advantages which could be cited. Let me say a word about the chaplain's work on board a ship, primarily. Now, I'm going to kind of restrict it to that because I think this is where his ministry perhaps takes on a most significant nature. A chaplain on board a ship is first and foremost a member of the staff of the commanding officer in the area of religion and morale and spiritual welfare. As such, he counsels the men. He performs services on Sunday. He conducts services as required. He conducts Bible classes. He carries on this type of ministry aboard ship. Additionally, he may be assigned collateral duties. Collateral duties would include aboard ship. No, it might include tour officer. In other words, when the ship puts into a port somewhere, the chaplain is the individual who arranges the tours, accompanies the men, sets up the buses, and sees to it that the tours are taken care of and that everything runs smoothly. He might be assigned as recreation officer in charge of recreation for the men on board the ship. He might be assigned as library officer in charge of the ship's library. These are perhaps the most significant. There are others. But I'd like to say just a word about collateral duties in general. There are some chaplains who have become bogged down with collateral duties, as you can well imagine. They have so many of these that it becomes, he might be editor of the ship's newspaper and be completely tied up with this sort of thing. He might be education officer, and so on down the line. But of late, the trend has been in the direction of very few collateral duties for the chaplain, simply because it is considered as something that has to take on a secondary significance for the chaplain. He has too many other things to do to be tour officer or athletics officer or any of these other things. And yet, at the same time, these are all jobs that have to be done by some officer on board the ship. And the chaplain is a member of the wardroom. He is a member of this team of officers. And therefore, it is generally considered appropriate that the chaplain also assume some of the responsibilities of these collateral duties. But that the collateral duties which he does assume and does accept are in keeping with his primary function as a chaplain on board that ship or on board that station. There are some chaplains, as I mentioned, who have been completely bogged down. And it has always been my contention that if a man is bogged down with collateral duties, it's his own fault. Because any commanding officer who sees that his chaplain is doing his job as a chaplain and is concerned about doing his job as a chaplain and doing it right and doing it thoroughly is not going to bog his chaplain down by asking him to perform all kinds of collateral duties which would take him away from his primary task and his primary mission. Collateral duties used to be quite a problem in the Navy Chaplain Corps, but this isn't true anymore. Primarily, the problem has been resolved. Does this cover the matter of
Plymouth? The philosophy behind this is, of course, you can have only so many people on board ship.
That's correct.
I mean, that's different from being on land where you can just put them in.
Yes, sir.
Well, we thank you very much, gentlemen.